What did you do, Mike?
This is the show that put the 110 Nation on the map. There is only one nation, the 110 Nation. And you're listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show. Covering each and every sport across the board. There is no sport too large or too little. It's time to talk the talk. Here we go. Here's the man, the founder, and your host, Mr. CJ Sports.
Sounds like Mike was trying to change things up there for a brief moment. Caught me a little bit off guard. I want to welcome everybody to the 110 Nation Sports Show. I am your host, Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow me at Mr. CJ Sports. You can follow the 110 Nation at 110 Nation. Check us out on Facebook, my personal fan page, Mr. CJ Sports, the 110 Nation fan page, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out our site, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. I want to make sure that I thank Fit for Life. You guys can find them on Facebook, Fit for Life, or you can go to our site, www.the110nationsports.com. On the right-hand side, click the pretty little banner, find a location near you. 24/7, 365, get your gym on. Clean facility, courtesy staff, everything you possibly need or want. That is Fit for Life. I also got to thank the I-95 Sports Network and Mile High Radio for rebroadcast or syndicating our show. Without all these great marketing partners and or networks, we wouldn't be able to do what we do or grow the way we grow. So I want to make sure that I thank them. Got Mike joining me in the studio. He's going to let you guys know what he has going on Friday night with Hot Laps with Stats, 8 p.m. right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. He's also going to let you guys know where he can be found, liked, and all the whatnots. Mike, how you doing tonight?
How you doing, CJ? Okay. I don't know what happened. I must have short-circuited there for a bit. Anyway.
It was the rant intro when we used to have the, or I had the rant show. That was the intro for it, because it was playing. Show me which one it was playing. It just caught me off guard. Ain't no biggie. It just caught me off guard. It must have clicked before it scrolled or something. I don't know.
Something. Anyway. Okay. Friday night, good show. Two first-time winners as far as in their divisions that they're running now. First off, John G. Fortin, we had John on last year, and he runs a modifier at Riverhead, goes up to Mountain Speedway every so often, which is now Evergreen, in Pennsylvania, and runs the modified all over the place, but basically, he's at Riverhead, that's his home track, and he won his first feature event of his career on Saturday night. And the other first-time winner is not a first-time career winner, because he's a legend champion and he's doing double duty this year. Vinny Delaney is running his own legend, and he's running the second car, the number 10, for Tom Ferrara, and they have a three-car team now. The 11X, we've had members of the team on. The 11X, the 10, and the 2 is back, driven by Rick Swanson. The 2 hasn't been out in about since the early 70s, maybe. But Rick is out and driving the third car, in addition to being the crew chief on all three cars. So he's a very busy man. But we'll be talking to Vinny Delaney also and see how he got kind of recruited to drive the figure eight car. And we'll talk to him about that and the differences he's finding with driving between driving the oval and driving the figure eight course. Another driver that's done both, so it'd be interesting to see, hear his take on it. And you can find me on my personal Facebook page, 110 Nation pages, Fat Laps with Stats pages, the website, and my Twitter account, which is at Stats108.
Oh, the countdown has begun, Mike. We are less than 1 hour away from game three of the NBA Finals. I'm not quite sure how I should feel right now, Mike. Like, part of me wants to be excited because it's game three of the NBA Finals. Part of me doesn't want to get excited because Golden State wins this, I feel it's a done deal. I would be surprised if it even goes five. I don't know. Cleveland might give it all you can get, effort, maybe a possibility of LeBron's last game as a Cavalier, Quicken Loans Arena. Everybody put on a full effort in, put one final show for the season on before Golden State goes back and finishes the series up, game five with the Oracle. Part of me wants to be excited and looking forward to it because I know that three out of the next four games are at home. So all Cleveland's got to do is catch momentum in these two home games, go game five, steal one in Golden State, and then come back and finish it up, the series up at home.
Yep.
There's a lot of things going through my head. I've had customers come in. It was really yesterday. Some customers thought that tonight's game was yesterday. And kept asking, what time are we playing tonight? What time's the game? What game are you talking about? Because I know you're not talking about the Cleveland Golden State game. It ain't Thursday night. In conversations that I've had over the last 2 days, I've tried not to get excited. As a matter of fact, I think that I've caught a lot of people off guard over the last 2 days because I've spent most of the last 2 days defending J.R. Smith. I'm still on this, and I know I'm in a small boat here with not a lot of company, but I'm sorry, I'm still on the fact that Coach Lou, if you're going to throw blame to anybody, you throw blame to Coach Ty Lue, and one of the smartest sports people that I know in my area that I talk to face to face. He's a diehard Ohio fan. He's a Buckeye. I think he's more of the Cincinnati Bengals and Reds versus Cleveland, but and a Cleveland Cavalier fan. He's from Ohio as well. He's our mailman, and he'll stop and take breaks on his route, and we'll talk 30 minutes, an hour, whatever the case may be. He agrees with me as well that where everybody has been throwing J.R. Smith underneath the bus, we both feel that it's Coach Lou that if anybody is to catch blame, that before you sent George Hill to the free throw line for those two shots, that you should have already talked to your team and already planned out if he misses the second one, if we get the rebound, call timeout right away. It should have even been set up since it was a tie score game. It should have been set up. Well, I wouldn't say foul right away. I would say no foul and put full court press if Golden State caught the ball, which they probably would have called timeouts. I think both teams had timeouts. And even if you didn't do it before the first shot, in between the two shots, when you made changes and made your substitutions or whatever, it should have been put out. We get the rebound, call timeout. That gives us 3 to 4 seconds. That is all the time you need in an NBA game for there to be an inbound pass and an opportunity to get a good clean shot, a good look shot off. And then even if we're going to overlook that, when the fact that you got four other players on the court standing around, you had LeBron James standing at almost midcourt with his hands up in the air like, where are you going, instead of calling a timeout. He would have been using, you know, this high basketball IQ that everybody says he's got. And I'm not trying to put LeBron James down. I'm not saying he'll have a high basketball IQ. I'm just tired of everybody throwing J.R. Smith under the bus. I'm not a J.R. Smith fan, but I feel that there's three or four other people above J.R. Smith that should be catching the blame versus J.R. Smith. But anyway, that's kind of what I've spent the last couple of days talking about, is not getting excited about game three. I'm not trying to get too excited about it. Focusing on the fact that three out of the next four games are in Cleveland, so if anybody has got a great shot, and this is where they're having a home court advantage is kind of a catch-22, because yes, it's nice you're going to have four games at home, but the way it's set up, if the visiting team can catch fire and carry momentum after winning three and four at home, it kind of gives them an advantage, because it's home three, home four, go steal one game five, and you get an opportunity to finish it up in game six at home. But the fact that Cleveland has the next three out of four games at home has been a focal point of my conversation. And the other focal point of my conversation for that I've had the last 2 days is Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith, and not in a negative way, in a way that I feel if we can get 10 to 15 points out of each. I'm not asking for 20-point games. I'm not asking, you know, for even high teams. I don't care if it's just 10 points. The additional 20 points, one, would have had us in game two and would have had us up in game one. I think if we can get 3 to 4 3-pointers out of each of these two guys, one, it helps spread the defense. It stretches everybody, because now if they're hitting those shots, now the defense has to stay true. Right now, the defense don't have to worry about J.R. Smith. He was, what, 2 for 8 the other night? Nobody has to worry about Kyle Korver. He, what, shot one technical free throw, and that was all he shot? These two guys, to me, are the key pieces for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Joy Hill's been playing a good series. Kevin Love's been playing a good series. Tristan Thompson's been playing a good series. Larry Nance has been playing a good series. And it was brought up, and I 100% agree. I'm not understanding why Calderon has not been playing. He might not score a lot of points. One, he does take high percentage shots. He doesn't just take a bunch of shots. But two, he's a great facilitator, and I'm not understanding why we have not seen him out there. He played a lot this season, so he's very, very familiar with the rotation, very familiar with the plays and everything else. I'm not understanding why Calderon has not been playing. But for the most part, these players that have been playing good. But you have Kyle Korver, who they have guarded very well, and Golden State's been making sure that Korver has not had an opportunity to catch fire and make a bunch of threes. He's got to find a way to get open. He's also got to find a way to get those backdoor passes right underneath the rim for the layups that he was doing so well in the first two rounds. That also makes the defense stay true. And J.R. Smith, he's got to find a way to, one, get a little bit more open, but two, to make these baskets, these balls go into the basket, and instead of putting up so many bad shots or missing so many shots. Because, I feel if these guys can score, even if it's 10 points, but I'm looking at 3 to 4, maybe 3 to 5 3-pointers, a couple points from the free throw line. You help make the defense have to guard you. They can't cheat and edge their way towards the paint and close the lanes down for LeBron. If you got J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver hitting 3-pointers, then that means those guys defending them have to stay out more towards the 3-point range out there by the arc. That way you don't give Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith wide open shots. But
yep.
I really want to get excited about it. I want to be pumped up, rowdy, everything else. And to be, in all honesty, until we got down to the last few minutes, I don't even know if it was the last few, it might have been the last minute, maybe 2 minutes at most, of the Boston Celtics series, And the Toronto series, I got pretty excited. I mean, 4-0 sweep. I mean, you know, I maybe not so much at first because, you know, you was kind of waiting for the other shoe to fall and waiting for Toronto to make a series out of it. But honestly, with the Boston Celtics series, until I got to the last minute or two of Game 7 and knew it was a wrap and Cleveland was definitely going to go into the finals, you know, I sat the whole game quiet. I, you know, my nephew's sitting there. He is an anti-LeBron fan. And he wanted Houston to go, and he wanted Boston to go, where he, even if Cleveland win, he wants Cleveland to lose anyway. He's more of, he wanted to see Chris Paul win a championship. He was very vocal. When I got into town Friday night, he was very vocal on the Sunday night game, and I sat there and I was chilled. I didn't really talk much. I didn't really celebrate on much. I didn't really clap or anything. So we got to that last minute or two. Then I was able to crack a smile. I was able to get a little excited. I was able to whoo and everything else. I've relatively, you know, even the first series with Indiana, I've had to stay very calm and not be very emotional, because if I let myself get excited about the ups, that makes the downs be even worse. And I don't want to get too excited, especially in this series, because I had a lot of doubts in the first three rounds because of the chemistry or the lack of chemistry and the lack of production and the lack of a lot of things to this Cleveland team. Even more so now going against the defending champions and the other team that's been there 4 years straight as well. I would like to be able to walk away from tonight's game and at least have a little bit of a grin, at least a little bit. You know, game one wasn't devastating to me. Game one let me know that Cleveland is a lot closer than a lot of people gave Cleveland credit for. It sucked, and it kind of, you got to be kidding me how we lost. And game two, even though we lost by 20 points, a lot of that was the game got out of hand in the fourth. It wasn't as bad as the score led that to be. But watching Cleveland stay close, and they actually closed the gap in period three or quarter three, that Golden State has been notorious for blowing teams out of the water at that point in time, gave me, you know, a little more of a sigh of relief, that knowing that this is not as lopsided as it once was projected to be, and knowing that if we can catch the momentum being at home, and that we could slip one in game five, this series could quickly turn back into our favor, and LeBron could do something that everybody thought he couldn't do with this group of players. But game three tonight, Mike. Lord have mercy.
Yep. I figured you would be on pins and needles. But I don't want to be a killjoy there, CJ, but I actually saw something tonight. Just go through my phone, you know, on the bottom there, I guess, like an ESPN thing that I have the news. LeBron is supposed to be talking to the Boston Celtics during the off season. Now, I don't know what that means, he supposedly is going to have a discussion with the Boston Celtics. So that's really the first time.
I just can't see with all the things said between him and Kyrie Irving, and unless there is no plans of Kyrie Irving being a long-term part of this organization, which I would find it hard to believe, I can't see LeBron going to Boston. There's a lot of bad blood between him and some of the players anyway, like Marcus Morris and a couple of the other players. But how this all played out with him and Kyrie Irving, I couldn't even see Boston allowing it to happen, because that was the reason why Kyrie Irving left Cleveland. He didn't want to be Robin to Batman. He wanted to be Batman. And if Boston brings LeBron James into Boston, that kind of defeats the purpose of why Kyrie Irving left Cleveland. Unless this was all some masterfully minded plan from the get-go, which there's been a couple scenarios that I have wondered, was this all part of some bigger scheme anyway? But more realistically, you know, it being transparent in it, and Kyrie Irving really wanting out of Cleveland because of LeBron James. One, I couldn't see LeBron wanting to go back to playing with Kyrie Irving after the things that were said. But more specifically, I couldn't see Boston putting Kyrie Irving into that predicament because, like I said, that was the reason he left.
Yeah. And, you know, Game 3, as you said, should be paramount on both teams' minds. But, you know...
In that report, was there any talk of Golden State? Because I've had a couple people come to me today talking about they heard some rumors of LeBron James and the Golden State, which I don't see that happening. Two teams in the West I don't see happening is Golden State and Houston, and that is more because him leaving is him further going, trying to pursue the GOAT conversation, because that's really the – and that involves championships. If you go to Golden State, how valid are your championships? If you go to a team that's already got Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, which I don't see how LeBron and Draymond Green would even play together, and Kevin Durant, and you add LeBron James to it, I mean, how valid is your championship? Because now you're essentially buying championships or you're padding your stats to go play with the Golden State Warriors. I just can't see that happening as well.
The only time I've seen that mentioned, Golden State, is in that story I posted earlier this week where they named 11 possible options for LeBron. Now, those two teams, Houston and Golden State, were in those 11 teams, or 11 options. But the only other team that I saw by themselves even discussed, and that was like the first team that was brought up, was L.A. So L.A. and Boston now are the two that stick out. I just, you know, call me, you know, naive, but I just, like you, I don't see LeBron leaving Cleveland. I just don't. And I won't say like you, because in the beginning you were saying, no, he could go here, he could go there. But I was the one from the beginning that said he wasn't going to go anywhere. And we'll just have to see what happens with the playoff series. Like you said, that could color his decision as well. But from the start, I just didn't see him leaving. Not even the ownership angle. I wasn't thinking of that at first. You brought that up with Dan Gilbert possibly selling him a portion of the team or a percentage of the team. And he wouldn't go, obviously, as you brought up, he wouldn't go play somewhere else and then come back to own the Cavaliers. But from the beginning, I just never saw him leaving because there was such a big hullabaloo about him coming home and all this, and okay, you're finally home, why would you leave again? You know, I just never saw him leaving Cleveland once he came back.
I would like to believe it, and I don't know, I would like to believe he wouldn't. I would like to believe that he said that he was coming home to stay. That's what he meant. All eyes are going to be on LeBron James this offseason. I wonder why Minnesota is not more of a conversation. I mean, could you imagine teaming him up with Jimmy Butler? And of course, they got Andrew Wiggins, who was the number one draft pick. And I don't know how the blood between them two are, because I think LeBron helped push Andrew Wiggins out of Cleveland to bring Kevin Love in. But you got Taj Gibson, you got Townsend, you got a squad that, you know, was very good. And if it would have been for injuries, Ricky Rubio was out, and it seemed like somebody else. If it went for injuries, I think this team could have went much further. And I really believe that if LeBron's going to leave, he's going to stay in the East, so the path is a little bit easier to get to the finals versus having to go through Houston or Golden State to get to the finals, or even possibly San Antonio, depending on what happens with Kawhi Leonard and everything else. And everybody's kind of just set if he leaves Cleveland, it's Philadelphia, or you know, this rumor of Boston gaining some momentum. I can't see that happening. I'm just kind of curious why the conversation of Minnesota, because even Milwaukee, I know it's been brought up a few times, but outside of Philadelphia, Milwaukee and Minnesota are two teams that are the next two teams that are up and coming. Like, those are the three teams that have been building their teams and using the draft pick. You add a LeBron James to any three of those teams, really, you're looking at NBA Finals possibly outside of Boston, depending on how strong they are when you put Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward back into the rotation. But it kind of makes me scratch my head at why everybody is so in their mindset that it's going to be Philadelphia if he stays in the East. Why not Milwaukee? Why not Minnesota? Like I said, those two teams are very good teams, and they're kind of built the same. They're kind of going through the same process.
Yeah, I just, like I said, it just only because of the whole home thing was played up, and I'm coming home and everything else. And then I understand that Cleveland may not be as strong as they've been in the past, but still, I just, for some reason, I just never saw it. Again, not that he didn't want to play for another championship, but to me, he almost could rebuild. If he said, "I want you to go out and get player X," nine times out of ten, they get player X. They haven't. If he actually wanted a player, he has. He may not get along with Dan Gilbert in the background, so to speak. But he also has Dan Gilbert's ear. So I don't know. It's a very odd situation for me if he leaves.
I think tonight I'll at some point tonight or tomorrow, I think I'm gonna pull up that article that he wrote in his return to Cleveland. I love to go back and reread how it was worded and if decipher whether or not he, at that point in time, had, he made it sound like he was never leaving Cleveland. Because I thought that's how it was worded, was that he was back for good. And if so, yep, then, we're all getting all psyched up and wrapped up into something that is not going to happen, because I can't see if that's the way it's worded and that's the way, it was perceived. I can't see LeBron. It's one thing to have never said it, came back and won a championship and took the Cavaliers to four straight NBA finals. I think the fans could get over if he left again. But if it's worded in a way or perceived that I am back and never leaving again, then I can't see him taking the chance of getting the same reaction that he got and how he handled it the first time, even though this time he would do it differently, but this time you said you were back and weren't leaving us again.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if it's the same article that you say you pull up, but there was almost a whole issue devoted to LeBron when he came home. And there was a lot of sympathy, excuse me, in there. And it ran two pages. It was almost the length of an article. And it was supposed to leave a letter word for word. So, interesting. Very interesting.
Let's go ahead and start making our trip around the sports world, Mike, and the topics that we need to get into tonight.
Okay. You might as well stay on LeBron, and this was the reason I initially brought up Game 3 should be paramount on both teams' minds. And I have to question, as a as a newspaper reporter, okay, and whatever form now, websites, whatever, I have to question some reporters' questions. They're actually cousin. I know you don't want to get political, but we have to just one more time. On the day or the eve, I guess it was yesterday, he was asked the question. LeBron was, and he answered it by saying, like, on the heels of the Philadelphia Eagle, Donald Trump White House visit situation, he actually said, if whoever wins the NBA Finals, whether it be Cleveland or Golden State, neither team would go. Now, I don't know, like, I can almost see him speaking on behalf of Cleveland, but did he actually go and talk to some of the Golden State Warriors and say, would you go visit Donald Trump? You know,
I don't know. I do know that I saw on Instagram today, though, I didn't get to listen to it because I was at work, but Steph Curry said he agreed with LeBron. So I don't know if the discussion was ever held, but I can tell you that I'm 99% confident that the Golden State Warriors are on board with what LeBron said anyway.
Right. Okay, well, that goes back to the fact that they shouldn't even do this anymore. Like we said last night, if that's the, they just should drop the whole idea. Like I said, I don't know how it started. Maybe one president was a fan of a particular team that won on a given year. But I don't know. I don't see the benefit to anybody if they don't show up. You know, if they don't show up, it looks bad for the team. It looks bad for the president if they don't show up. So I would just drop the idea. That's just me. You know, maybe you shouldn't combine sports and politics anyway. You know, like they say, you shouldn't talk, you know, politics, sex, and what's the third thing? I forget. But that
religion.
Maybe you shouldn't mix sports and politics either.
I agree.
The next story is from baseball, and you want to talk about a good story, positive story, CJ? We were talking about no-hitters earlier in the season and how people just, and me, I'll take it on. And when I introduced the story earlier about a no-hitter, I forget who threw it at this point. But you even said to me, you chuckled and said, you just said about a no-hitter like as if, you know, it was you gave up a single or something or you hit a home run. And I know what you meant, but I read this story today. Now, I didn't even know what they called this. Max Scherzer from the Nationals, the Washington Nationals, threw a immaculate inning. And I never knew what that was. It's not a perfect inning. It's not a perfect, you know, 1-2-3. What it is, yes, it's 1-2-3, but it's striking out three men on 9 pitches. In other words, no balls, you know, just strike one, strike two, strike three, all the way through. And so I learned something in that, because I had never heard the term. There is actually something called an immaculate inning when a pitcher plays catch with the catcher for three hitters. And that means the hitter doesn't put the bat on the ball, doesn't foul anything off, doesn't touch the ball, just three strikes. And that's, you know, all done. And he's done that now twice in his career, and he's only one of 5 pitchers to do that in history, CJ. So
one of five players to do it twice, or one of 5 players to do it, period?
He's the only one to have done it twice, and there's been 5 guys that have done it in history.
Really? That's it?
So
I was going to ask you how often this happens. I would have thought a little bit more often than just five people in the history of baseball. You would have think as many games, 162 games and, 30 teams, per all these years, you would have thought more than five people would have thrown nine straight strikes without anybody, no fouls or none. I just would have thought it would have happened more than just five times.
You would have.
Well, six times because he's done it twice.
Right, yeah, but you would have thought, but you got to remember, somewhere in there was probably a foul ball. And the immaculate ending is you can't even have a foul ball. So, I'm sure.
I mean, I get that. You would just think, because you think about how many, you're talking nine innings times 162 games times 30 teams times how many years. You just thought it would have that would have happened more than six times in the history of baseball. I mean, I understand that's a crazy, good stat to have, and it takes the right, pitches and the right scenario and everything else. But as many innings that have been pitched in the history of baseball, I just thought it would have happened more than six times.
I agree, but apparently not, but he's done it twice, which makes it even more rare. Not more rare, but more special that he's been able to pull it off twice. So I remember when he went from the Tigers to the Nationals, and they said he's probably the steal. That year, he was the steal of the free agency market, and it's true. I mean, he didn't want to sign. I remember he didn't want to sign with the Tigers. He was definitely going, and he was going to get the big money, and he certainly did. And even though the one thing is the Nationals haven't broken through yet, and I think they'll be the next team too, and the way the Mets are going, and I'm not just picking on my Mets, the way the National League East is going this year, with the Marlins obviously not going anywhere, the Mets struggling, and the Phillies struggling, this could very well be the Nationals' year. And I know with their pitching staff last year, they thought they would go farther. But, we'll see what happens. But the NL East is not very strong this year.
I don't know. I'm still just baffled that this has only happened six times. Like I said, it's something that is rare. I get that. And, to have somebody throw nine straight pitches and all be strikes and none of them be fouled, I understand that there's a lot of things that got to fall in line for it to happen. But, good God, there's been a lot of innings pitched in the history of baseball amongst all these teams that – to know that there's only been five pitchers and one of them's done twice in the history. I don't know. I'm kind of just sitting there scratching my head. That's just crazy to me.
Right. Okay. The next story was on basketball.
Because we've probably had more perfect games than we've had these innings. Like,
and near perfect games. Perfect games. Tom Seaver in 69. I remember it was 2 years into me following baseball. And years they talked about he got down to two outs in the ninth inning. And against the Cubs, who were the Mets' main competition in the National League West that year. And he ended up giving up, the hit with two outs in the ninth inning. And, I mean, he's been close. Gooden did it once. And this is just the Mets. But like you say, we've had perfect games with Nolan Ryan. Unfortunately, Nolan Ryan was a Met, but he got his perfect games with the Houston Astros and the California Angels. So,
what I'm saying, though, is a perfect game to me is much harder because it's a perfect game. And I, without looking up, I'm assuming that we've had more and probably many more perfect games than we've had of these miraculous, innings that all you got to do is just be great for one inning versus great for nine innings. That just, I don't know. I'm just sitting here thinking that's just crazy.
It's very strange, CJ. You know, when you think about it in that aspect, you're right. You know, you would think it would be fundamentally easier to be spot on in one inning, even if you fell apart and lost the game.
Yeah.
You could have a perfect inning in the midst of a game where you struggled, you know, by and large struggled and lost maybe even.
Yeah.
So, yes, in that aspect, it is very, very odd. And you talk about smoke and fire, CJ. The 76ers, as you said, rumored to sign LeBron, and I think they got to worry thanks to Mrs. Colangelo. I think they have to worry more about their front office than what's on their court right now. The owners, now it's gone upstairs. There was talk about within the organization, they were debating the fate of Brian Colangelo over a Twitter post. And they actually uncovered the fact that it wasn't Brian Colangelo, and he was defending himself, but he also didn't mention his wife was the one that wrote the tweet. And the thing about it is, now they were talking within the organization. They didn't say who was debating. Now it's gone up to the ownership level, and a group of owners are sitting down. So I don't expect, you know, again, call me naive, but I'd be very surprised if Brian Colangelo keeps his job, CJ. And this is just another instance. I know all throughout football season we talked about, I can't think of his name right now, but there was, I actually read a whole story on it, and I can't remember who it was. A defensive back for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, his wife always went on social media and, you know, interacted with the front office and why isn't my husband playing more and, you know, why isn't he doing this and this. And I believe she was even his agent, CJ, at one point. And they had the article about the husband and wife and, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers having to deal with her. And mostly was the social media. So, you know, that's another case, and here's another case of it where, you know, a spouse could very well have jeopardized his career. I mean, his career is on a string right now, and just a very odd story.
Yeah, as things keep unfolding now, out there, that whole Philadelphia destination is looking even less and less of an option. Lamar's not going to go with all the drama and all the that is going on in Philadelphia.
Right. And two stories that we talked about this the other night. You even said you watched a series of it. Florida State University, known for their football, ended up winning their first college women's college World Series.
I watched more than just a series, Mike. I watched like four or five different games. The Florida State Seminoles winning. It took them 9 tries. This was their 10th try, and they finally won the championship. And I tell you what, their pitcher had one earned run last night, and that's the only earned run that their pitcher has had. The pitcher was pitching last night. The only earned run that she has had in the entire playoffs, she pitched something like 33 and a half or 34 and a half. I don't know if they were counting the last inning when they were talking about it. I don't know if they count until the inning was over, but something like 33.5 or 34.5 innings with one earned run throughout the whole playoff run. I tell you what, that was some phenomenal pitching by their pitcher last night.
Right. And so they, congratulations to them. They beat Washington, which is a good team, but wasn't even the favorite team. The favorite team was knocked out by Florida State in a surprise, and that was UCLA. And, you know, I've heard that UCLA was good only because they had a lot of pitchers that were on the Olympic team at one point. So I know UCLA was very good with softball. So anyway, that's the extent of my knowledge on you know, softball and women's college softball. But anyway, that's that. And then another story that, believe it or not, CJ, started, we started talking about this last fall, right around my birthday, because I remember the fight was supposed to take place on my birthday, September 16th. Well, believe it or not, they've been talking basically all year long, and they were trying to set up this Golovkin, I think it's the opponent's name is Cesaro or something like that. I didn't even really pay attention. But they were the only two boxers, and we mentioned this, that anybody would have, you know, even an inkling of interest in. And they got greedy, or one of them got greedy, and wanted to be paid. And you never have this happen, because one guy is always the champion, and the champion, no matter what division you're talking about, I mean, you could be talking about Golden Gloves, and your winner's going to make more than the guy he beats, or the challenger, let's say. And apparently the challenger got greedy and didn't want the winner to get as much money as he did, or they wanted to be paid evenly or whatever, equally. And Oscar De La Hoya, who's a former boxer himself and is now a promoter, pulled the plug. So that boxing match will not take place at all. So actually, CJ, like I said, they've been talking and negotiating for a year, and it comes to nothing. And, you know, I don't know where the state of boxing is, but like you said so many times, not a lot of people are interested in boxing with MMA out there, for one example.
The world of boxing. Yeah, I remember once upon a time when boxing was a big thing, and it was a very popular thing. I understand that the whole UFC kind of hurt that sport, and then whether or not, you know, a lot of people, you know, feel that a lot of these different matches are rigged, or, you know, the boxers taking a fall for the money. You know, we talked about this before. I wish that, you know, boxing could find a way to make itself grow, gain momentum, and become a popular thing that it once was.
Yep. And I can remember when boxing was really popular. And there's really two sports, CJ, that one has become a niche sport, and one, boxing, has become almost non-existent right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the niche sport I'm dealing with, the two sports that were really big, I would say, in my grandparents' generation, when I was a young kid, and I used to watch my grandfather watch, well, my grandmother loved wrestling. That's a whole other matter. She was a Puma San Martino, of course, being Italian, you know, and I remember being seven. I remember being like 7 years old, CJ, and realizing that that wrestling was fake, or, you know, not real. But you couldn't tell my grandmother that. She didn't want to hear that, you know. She would argue till you know, sundown that, you know, the wrestlers were real. But anyway, to get back to what I was saying about boxing, the other sport that's become a niche sport where people will watch it on a given occasion, like the Kentucky Derby or the Breeders' Cup or something like that. Or like I said, I would love to be able to be specializing in personality pieces and feature articles. I could see writing about, you know, a day at the racetrack and following, as a reporter, following a, you know, a trainer around or that kind of thing to get color and to get personality stories and so on. But the other sport that was absolutely huge in my grandparents' day, CJ, is horse racing. Those two were the two main sports, if you could believe it. Thoroughbred racing and boxing were the two greatest sports that people used to talk about now, like we talk about NASCAR, you and I, you know, and Chris and Craig and, you know, the people that are real race fans. The people in my grandfather's day used to talk about boxing and thoroughbred racing the same way we talk about NASCAR racing. So those two sports have really fallen off popularity-wise.
Yeah, they definitely have. Oh, Lord have mercy. I think that we've covered everything that you had on your list, didn't we?
Yep, and the only thing I have to add is for NASCAR, and it's more or less to underline what we said in the past. No unnecessary. I mean, they probably got fined like $10,000, you know, in that neighborhood. But the only penalty that came out of Pocono was the Xfinity car that you saw. I guess you were at Myrtle Beach when you heard about it. But Kyle Busch was penalized, or the team was penalized, and so that's the only penalty. That was the only penalty. I said I would keep an eye on it, and that's the only penalty that was announced Wednesday morning, and they knew that already. They had announced, like you said, that Saturday after the race. But that was the only penalty that was handed down that came out today, Wednesday. And if they brought it in, then it's going to be after that, I guess. It's very rare that they go into the next week after Wednesday. It's usually that Steve O'Donnell that either goes on Sirius or has a news conference or whatever, and that's where they announce all these violations. But strangely enough, the only one to be announced, and it wasn't a lug nut, it was a the height, and in this case, it was not the lightness of the car; it was the height of the body, and that was going back to, I guess it was Monday when mentioned it. That was the thing that Kyle Busch had said: how can you penalize me for having the car too high when that's a disadvantage in any case? Because you want to have the body low to get down to. But still, they have the height regulations either way, low or high. So he got caught, or the team got caught, and they got penalized. So that's the only penalty coming out of Pocono. So that's NASCAR. Now, interestingly enough, CJ, with that, we have Michigan, and I don't know, I guess the guys will pick tomorrow night. That's usually what they do on the race track. But I did my fantasy picks for this weekend for one of the leagues I'm in, and it's interesting that Who do you think is number one right now, active, as far as Michigan in wins?
Who has the best average finish?
Yes.
Is it Kyle Larson?
Got it. Kyle Larson. And Harvick is number six.
Hmm.
He's only six. And I think Truex comes in right for him. So those are the three. And actually, it's going to be an interesting pick. It'll probably be Larson because he's number one in terms of ranking. But I saw the list today that said Chase Elliott is number three. I'm pretty sure it wasn't anybody active. It might have even been Junior that's finished well at Michigan in his career of all the tracks. Maybe not of all, but one of the higher ranking ones was Michigan. I believe, I know Larson was number one, and I believe Chase was number three, and I believe Elliott was number three, Chase Elliott, and I believe Junior was number two. So it went Larson, Junior, Chase, and then I forget who was number four. Truex was five, and Harvick was six.
Hmm.
So that's very interesting. Out of the first six drivers, there's only one that's inactive, and that's Junior right now. In other words, he won't be running on Sunday. But the other three or four out of the six will be in the race, Sunday. So be interesting to see who comes out on top.
Most definitely. Chase Elliott has done really well at Michigan, and a lot of people, they constantly pick Chase Elliott to win Michigan. They feel that Michigan might be that track where he finally gets his first win. Didn't Kyle Larson get his first win in Michigan? Wasn't it Michigan that he got his first Cup Series win?
I think so, yep.
I think so, too.
I believe so, yep. I know,
well,
the way that they have the percentages, he finishes first, like one, he's up there, like the amount of times he's ranked like 1.2. It's really, minimal. And then you get down to Harvick and he's finished first, like maybe 16% of the time or something like that. And he's only six, but it's very interesting. Like Kyle Larson is, up there as far as I forget what they call it, like percentage of finishes or whatever, the amount of times, and he's like number one by, a pretty wide margin between him and number three, which is Chase, Very interesting. I just thought that was, I think for the individual team, just to see how the breakdown is. And sometimes you'd be surprised, like Carl Edwards is in the first, I think Carl Edwards is in the first five as well. That's why Harvick is six. So I think it's like Chase is three. If I remember correctly, Carl Edwards was the other one besides Junior that's obviously not running, that's currently not running. But the other, two out of the six.
Out of the six.
The other four are running, this weekend. But Carl Edwards is the other one within top six. That's why Harvick is ranked sixth and not fifth.
Well, Mike and myself had discussed before the show, if we got through all the topics, with Game 3 being such a pivotal game, because I think we all feel if Cleveland is unable to win Game 3, that's pretty much a wrap. It might go to 5, and you know, Cleveland might save face and win Game 4 at home, but that would probably be a wrap on it. And no team's ever come back from 3-0 deficit in the NBA Finals. 3-1 was Cleveland as it is. With it being a pivotal game, and we got it through all the topics, we're going to cut tonight a little bit early so everybody can pull away from the radio and be able to watch the Game 3 of the NBA Finals. So with that being said, Mike, go ahead and let them know what you got going on Friday and where you can be found, liked, and all the whatnots.
Okay, CJ. We got John G. Fortin coming up on Friday night. Winner of his first career modified, tour-type modified win at Riverhead on Saturday night. A very emotional win. His dad, obviously, very emotional. I saw the video. I posted that on the 110 page as well, and on the Hot Laps with Stats page, because he will be a guest on Friday. But the interesting thing, CJ, is like everybody at the track, and because they've had before the event of history at the track, both Ice Slip with the dad and the obviously the son and the daughter even, for a period, Amber ran at Riverhead in a modified. They had 3 modifieds out at one time, during seasons past. And like I said, he broke through for his first career win. And like everybody was, even the mascot was hugging him, and it was very emotional for him. So it'll be interesting to hear his take on everything that went down leading up to it. So we'll talk to John on Friday night. And then we also have a first-time winner in the figure eight division. Not that he's a stranger to Victory Lane by any stretch, because Vinny Delaney is also a legend champion. But he got his first figure eight win, courtesy of being on the team and driving the second car for Tommy Ferrara's team, the 11X, and Vinny drives the 10, and like I said earlier, Rick Swanson, who is the crew chief, has decided to bring the team back out, and he hasn't put a Mustang body on this one, CJ, but the interesting thing about this is back in the day, he was one of the only ones in the Mustang body on a figure eight. So we'll talk to Vinny and John on Friday night. Should be an interesting show. First time news will be received of the show Friday in most divisions. So very interesting. So we hope you tune in and hopefully some of the fans throughout the week as well. You can find me on my personal Facebook page, the 110 Nation pages, the Hot Laps with Stats pages, the website, and also the Twitter account, which is @Stats108.
Make sure that you guys check us out on Twitter @110Nation. Give us a like on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. Also, check out our site, www.the110nationsports.com, for all the latest going on here at the 110 Nation. I want to make sure that I thank Fit for Life, the I-95 Sports Network, and Mile High Radio for help making all this possible. Without them, we wouldn't be able to do what we do and grow the way we grow, so I want to make sure that I thank them. Don't forget, tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, Race Chat Live with Craig and Chris, or Chris and Craig. I said that backwards. So make sure you guys tune into that. And, of course, Friday night, 8 o'clock, Hot Laps with Stats right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network. For all those that are listening in, make sure you guys jump over, check out Game 3. This and Sunday or Friday's game will be hot topics for us on Monday. Hopefully we're talking about Cleveland being 2-2 back at Golden State and the Oracle. But I guess we'll sit here and find out. For all the rest of y'all, tomorrow night, what is that, Mike?
Yep, that's it. Tomorrow night.
Till then.
Thanks for listening to the 110 Nation Sports Show with Mr. CJ Sports. You are a part of the 110 Nation, so be sure to visit the 110nation.com for everything related to the show. You can follow CJ on Twitter at 110Nation and on Facebook at 110Nation Sports. Until next time.